Indifference as Derek Chauvin held his knee on George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes, ultimately killing him. The indictment says the three men saw Floyd clearly needed medical care and failed to aid him. Federal prosecutions of officers involved in on-duty killings are rare. Prosecutors face a high legal standard to show that an officer willfully deprived someone of their constitutional rights. Essentially, prosecutors must prove that the officers knew what they were doing was wrong, but did it anyway. And in weather today, in Washington, D.C., it is 36 degrees and cloudy. In New York City, 31 degrees and cloudy. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Time now is 1 minute past 1 p.m. Stay tuned for Leonard Lopate at Large here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Okay. All right. And here we go.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. Today's weather turned out to be less of a mess than was predicted, but joining us now with advice on how to deal with some of the problems we can expect in the near future, the rain and the snow, are Lawrence and Alvin U. Bell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn. Over the years, they've inspired millions of hesitant do-it-yourselfers to take repairs into their own hands. Alvin served as the household hints and safety editor with Family Circle magazine for over two decades. He was a regular on ABC TV's Good Morning America for 5 years and also on ABC's Talk Radio Network for 5 years. And his son, Lawrence, is the company's president and chief inspector. They join us now to offer their expert advice to you, our listeners, and we invite you to call us with your questions at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Alan, Larry, welcome back to our show.
It's nice to be back. It's delicious to be here.
Now, keeping homes warm has become a news story. Beyond using supplemental heat sources, what are the most sensible ways to keep our homes warm and avoid the sorts of things that we've been seeing, the fires and such?
Well, you have to understand what heat is and what it isn't. And the thing that keeps us warm is two elements. First is three elements: the barometric pressure, the relative humidity, and the amount of heat that's in your living space. And you can't change the relative humidity, barometric pressure, but you can change the relative humidity by maybe putting a tea kettle up on a stove and bringing it up to a boiling point and let the steam raise the relative humidity in the atmosphere of your home. If you could bring that,
but you say you could, but you don't want to bring it to a boil because
you bring the tea kettle to a boil and let the steam come out, and when you could actually almost in a few moments in that space, well, it will probably be in the kitchen, in that space, all of a sudden you'll feel more comfortable. Of what makes you cold is the moisture of your body that is being converted to a gas. And that, as that happens, your body seems to be colder than it actually is. and that's what really takes place.
But the water's going to boil down, and we have to be careful, don't we? We shouldn't leave the kettle unattended.
You got to wash that tea kettle and keep adding water to it on a regular basis. But that is really the best thing that one can do that is relatively safe, rather than having an unattended, sometimes certain types of heaters you got to be very careful for, and also to not use the stove itself, especially if it's a gas stove, to try to heat your house. That's just an exercise in futility. It doesn't work that well, but people have to be careful about that.
Well, I also have to say, I do want to jump in here a moment.
Sure, go ahead, Larry.
You know, there are a couple of things that, you know, you have to bring in, which is how much control do you have over the heating process of your space, whether you're a homeowner or you're a apartment dweller or a renter. You know, these are all different factors that can contribute. Like, for instance, if you're a homeowner, you know, obviously just turning up the thermostat, or if your heating system is undersized, there are other things that you can do, like putting, if you have a freestanding radiator, putting aluminum foil behind the radiator to reflect more of the heat back into the room, putting either plastic or actually blankets over windows to create to reduce the heat loss from windows. Windows are a substantial heat loss. They have next to no insulating value at all. Even if they're thermal pane, double insulated glass windows, they still have very low insulating value.
But don't we want to open the shades on the sunny side of our homes?
If that's the case, but I'm thinking that most people have issues with heat at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, during the day, the warmth of the day helps out, generally speaking. But when we're talking about people getting really cold at night, that's when these things, you know, play into effect. As far as, you know, people not, you know, we encourage people not to use ovens and stoves and things like that to make heat. But we also have to be practical that if you are, you know, if you're in a situation where there's no heat, you're not going to just sit there and freeze to death. So if you're going to do those things, by all means, do not use cooktop burners to create heat. And if you're going to use an oven for heat, at least leave the oven door closed. So that way it's basically just operating as an oven, as if you were cooking a turkey or something else. So be smart. Yes?
I just want to get back to your point about the thermostat.
Yes.
We should be, it suggested we set it at around 68, no higher than 70. Because what happens if we go higher? Is it just a matter of our electric bill?
Electric or gas or just energy usage, and it puts more of a stress on the grid, whether it be gas or electricity, but also, you know, creates more greenhouse gases. Even if you are using electric, even if you have to know where you're getting your electricity from. If you're getting it from a renewable source, then it's less of a, you know, less of a carbon footprint. But if you're getting it from a source where they're using fossil fuels to make electricity, it's, you know, like I say with my EV, my carbon footprint at the usage of my car is zero, but it's got to be somewhere else where I'm getting the electricity from. So those are the things you have to speak to as far as the temperature of the thermostat. But I think we're more speaking to people who are underheated or not getting heat at all and don't have a source because whatever reason the central system in their dwelling unit is not working. And therefore, you know, if you're going to get electric space heaters, we encourage people to get the oil-filled type, that as opposed to the ones where you can actually see the electric coils, which, you know, can create more spontaneous combustion.
Well, an electric heater was the cause of the horrific fire in the Bronx. In rentals, what are the responsibilities of landlords in keeping people's homes warm?
Well, the landlord is responsible for keeping the heat and the building so that the occupants of the building have to be comfortable, particularly at night when the building has its most heat loss because the sun is not on the building any longer. This is a big problem. Most apartments throughout the city of New York don't have thermostats in their apartment. That's usually regulated by the building itself, usually with what is known as an outside thermostat, which is set by the superintendent or the stationary engineer of the building itself. And when you're feeling uncomfortable, the tenant has to complain. Some people are afraid to complain to the landlord because they think that he's the master of what's going on. No, complain. Complain to the Department of Housing and make sure that somebody comes around and checks the heat of that building, that you are comfortable. Because if you're not comfortable, you're going to do drastic things which could cause terrible things into the building itself and jeopardizing the welfare of everybody else in that building.
Well, okay, so we had the terrible fire in the Bronx caused by an electric heater. So how do we know what is a safe electric heater?
Well, electric heater, if you buy one, you got to make sure that it's UL listed. There's usually a label on that unit that's UL listed. The thing is that...
Well, that stands for U Bell Larry?
No, U... Underwriters Laboratory listed. That's what UL stands for. And that means that that particular heating unit had been checked out by the Underwriters Laboratory to make sure that it runs safely, that it has a tip-over safety switch, that it has a, what do you call it, cutoff high temperature limit switch. Also, it has a device in it that if it goes to a temperature that could be dangerous, it shuts the unit down automatically.
And make sure, and if it makes noise, that's, or an odor, that's an issue?
Yeah, that's an issue. If your electric heater starts making noise, that means probably the fan motor inside the unit is chafing against something, and that could cause a problem with its the separation of the heat from the unit into the apartment. And if it has an odor to it, that means maybe the insulation someplace inside the unit is overheated, and that's the time to get rid of that unit.
We invite our listeners to call. Our number here is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Larry, you were talking?
Yeah, I do want to comment on the horrific fire that occurred in the Bronx, and that we don't really have all the information. The preliminary information was that it was a space heater that had caused the fire, but we also know that that smoke migration that went through the hallways, and we don't also know. They also talked about how maybe that apartment door, the automatic locking, the self-closing door wasn't working. But we also don't know if the self-closing doors on the halls or on the fire stairs were working. So even if the door in the hall itself was not for the apartment was not working, well, the ones for the fire stairs should have still been working and stopped the smoke from getting into the fire stairs. So there's a lot into this investigation that we have to find out.
And there's even less known about the gas explosion that caused another major fire in the Bronx just the other day.
Yeah, so these investigations do take a while. And so I don't think we actually, should just blame a particular thing at this point since it's a preliminary point. But my more important is the fact that probably people don't have enough smoke detectors in their units because there should be a photoelectric smoke detector in every sleeping area. And that would probably save more lives than anything else because, early alert to what's happening in your building and in your apartment is one of the most important factors to saving lives.
Some people hate them because they go off whenever they cook anything.
Well, that's because that's correct, because that is because they should not be in kitchens, or they shouldn't be anywhere near a kitchen, because a kitchen's supposed to have smoke. It's a kitchen. okay? It's supposed to be in the bedrooms. Mm-hmm. In the bedrooms. You won't get a smoke detector going off from cooking if it's in the bedroom. The second thing is that we also know that ionization smoke detectors have nuisance alerts from burning food or burnt toast and that sort of thing, because it's very susceptible to that. On the other hand, those same smoke detectors will not go off when there's a real smoldering fire which has large particulates, which is very poisonous to human beings. So photoelectric smoke detectors, don't put them in the kitchen. Put them in the bedrooms. And if you do want to have a level of safety in your kitchen, put in a fire sensor or a fire detector or a fire alarm. That senses heat, not smoke. And so those are the things you do to protect yourself. But knocking the smoke detector off the ceiling because it goes off when you're doing your stir fry is not the way to go.
My guests on today's Leonard Lopate at Large are Almond and Lawrence Ubell. And we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. You say that if window drapes or papers are blowing around, it's a sign that the frames are loose and don't fit properly. What should we do to overcome that problem?
Well, if a window doesn't, first of all, there's a latch usually, especially with double-hung windows. If there's a latch at the center portion, at night, you should lock those things down that the window is least tight. If a window pane is broken and has a hole in it, that you got to get the landlord and don't be afraid to call 911 to complain about a broken window or opening window that is drafty. Don't be afraid to contact the buildings department, the housing department. These are agencies that help people and prevent people from hurting themselves and their family.
Let me interject, Alvin. You meant 311.
I apologize. Well, 911, 311 is very good, and they'll tell you whether you should call 911. 911 is a direct emergency. You're correct. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. But
not a problem.
But I find that many tenants are afraid to call these city agencies. For God's sake, don't be afraid. They are your agents. You pay taxes for them to prevent people from killing themselves and their family.
Let's take some calls, okay? Again, the number 212-209-2877. BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. You know, it's so apropos that you have this particular subject that you're covering currently. New Yorkers pay $2,000 a month for three rooms, you know, and many times high-rises, the apartments are cool, even though it's 71 degrees in the apartment, because I have friends who will complain if there's a problem. The gentleman that you have on, one of them spoke about putting blankets over the windows of plastic. I think that's creative. Can you give us any other ideas?
Or newspaper? Is that a good idea as well?
Well, you do want to have something that has at least a insulating factor to it. The newspaper is not so much because, I mean, if you wrapped yourself in a newspaper, how warm would it keep you? I mean, unless you're going to wear the whole Sunday edition.
Is there anything that you could grout the window openings? Because sometimes there's like little cracks around.
I was going to mention this. Duct tape is very effective as a temporary measure for sealing up any gaps or cracks that are in the window around the frame. I mean, if you really do want to go a little bit more professional, you can go get a tube of caulk and caulk all the joints on the interior of the window. And also, if you have access to the exterior, not if you're six stories up, but if it's ground level or it's outside of a terrace, you can caulk from the outside. But I have to say, as a stopgap method, you know, duct tape is pretty effective at stopping airflow. We also have to realize there are two types of things. There's heat flow and there's airflow. Okay, like insulation is a thermal barrier where plastic or duct duct tape or caulk would be an air barrier. So if you stuff insulation into a crack, that's not going to stop the airflow. It may stop the heat from moving, but it's not going to stop the air. And pretty soon that insulation will act like a filter, just filtering the air that goes through it, but the air will still go straight through. So you have to have, you have to take in consideration there is airflow and there's heat flow. And you have to deal with either thermal barriers or air barriers.
And you recommend?
Duct tape as a stopgap method right now in the middle of the winter where air might be coming through a window to seal up. Sometimes, like my father said, locking the latch between the upper and lower sash on a double-hung window is very effective. But if you can't, but if they don't match up, and a lot of times they don't, I do a lot of inspections where windows do not match up where the upper and lower sash connect. Put some duct tape between the upper and lower at the joint of the upper and lower sash meet, and that will stop some of the airflow.
Okay, caller, is there something you want to add to that? Oh, she's gone. Okay. Let's take another call. Again, our number 212-209-2877. BAI, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. I happen to live in a very drafty building, and I've got a couple of real good suggestions. One are space blankets. There were, you can order them online, a big package of them. I put it under the mattress pad in my bed, or if you can't stand the crinkling sound, put it between the mattress and the box spring. The other thing that I've been a great fan for many years is weather stripping. In the bad old days, I used to use that kind of itchy stuff. Was a woolly kind of product with a, you know, I stapled that around my windows in New York. Out here, I've found that they have these foam weather strippings in many different contours and thicknesses.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in the tracks on the side and across the bottom. There's all sorts of wonderful things you can stuff. And I have wall-to-wall drapes in both my living room and my bedroom. Some of them double. Because if you have two things a couple inches apart, it will be as warm as a blanket.
I agree. That will, all those things, all those things are very beneficial.
Yeah, also too, about moisture. Most apartments have about 17% humidity, and it dries you out. If you don't have the kind of radiator where you can put a container of water on top of it, you can put a bowl of water in front of one of those vents that comes out of the floor.
That's true, too.
But you've got to be very, very careful. I have used a crock pot in my bedroom for years. As soon as the weather, I call it sinus weather, I put the crock pot on, but I always leave a container in my bathroom sink. So I'm reminded in the morning to turn it off and put some more water in. So, we don't have a fire when you're out. I mean, most crock pots they do stop themselves immediately. But a bowl of water is very good. Pets like it, too. So that's my suggestion.
Well,
have a great
thank
day.
You so Thanks much.
For being there. We love your show. We love when you come on.
Thank you.
The thing about a newspaper, what I find is with two kinds of windows, that you have double-hung windows, and then you have the casement windows, which act like almost like a door, or sliding windows. The thing is that if you roll up the newspaper into like a tube or something like that, and you can put it on the windows in the groove of the windowsill on the bottom, and then just pull the window down onto the paper, a roll of paper, or put it into the opening on the where the two windows come together on the casement windows. And you could also put that paper when you have what they call the sliding windows, where they lock together, but put it at those joints. That's where most of the air ventilation or the leakage of cold air coming into the building and absorbing the heat that's inside the apartment or the building.
I'm also going to say, I just want to chime in on one thing that lately I found I've been doing a lot of inspections of apartments where the apartments themselves have quite a bit of glass, big windows on a particular wall of a building, of an apartment, and then the people are complaining that they don't have enough heat because that large portion of glass window is such a heat loss that during cold weather, the heating equipment that's installed cannot compensate for that heat loss. That's why in many of those same buildings or in other buildings, they put in auxiliary resistance heating in the floor, an electric radiator, if you will, in the floor, and that will provide an additional heat. So that's why.
What about Venetian blinds, Larry?
Any barrier, like the woman was saying, any barrier that creates an air gap or an air space, a dead air space, will do it. Venetian blinds will have some benefit, as will some of these new solar honeycomb shades that have air gaps in them. All of those will add a certain additional insulating factor additional to the window itself, because like I said before, glass does two things very badly: insulate and protect. It does one thing really good: you can see through it. So for that benefit of seeing through it, we pay a price by security and insulation. So what do we do to make up for those things? Well, we put curtains and blinds and shades. And I was just using the example of blankets and towels because in a situation where it's very cold and you want something to warm up the room so you can at least get somewhat comfortable, that would work to just hang those things over those window openings.
Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Great.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, you can hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I had two issues, and this is regarding a townhouse that has, old piping. And the plumber had said, any changes on piping now have to be, from lead to copper. Is that something new that they're requiring, the city is requiring?
That was one question. And so I need to ask that one question. What piping in your house is lead? Hello?
Yeah, she's looking.
I'm not sure which one it was for, but it's supposed to be a connection to the, not the sewer. It was just the regular water
main. Oh, you're talking about the water main.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say a couple of things about that. If you have a lead water main, if he's trying to talk you into a new water main, which will probably cost you somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000.
Okay.
Well, what's he saying it's going to cost?
It was going to be less than $5,000.
Specifics, would be helpful. But is this
I have another question.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
She couldn't find the owner couldn't find the shut off valve, and I want to know. I'm looking around too, but where is going to be in the basement a likely location for the shut off?
Oh, of the water main of the water main shut off.
Right. Yes.
It would be toward the front of the building, wherever the street wherever the building faces the street. It'll be along that wall, and in most cases, two telltale signs. There'll be a water meter attached to it, I'm assuming. And then the other thing is there probably will be an electrical wire clamped to the pipe that comes through the foundation. And so if you see an electric clamp with a wire connected to it, that's the grounding or earthing clamp, and which grounds the electrical system to the water main. Or there's a water meter attached to it, okay? And that's the other water meter. And there are a lot of different shapes for it, but you could tell it's a meter. And if it'll have numbers and dials and things like that. And if there's a water meter attached to it, that's the water main.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
No problem.
And we thank you for your call and remind you that you're listening to Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI New York 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. And we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. with Lawrence and Alvin Ubell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, regulars on our program as well. And they come by to talk about the all sorts of different issues, how-to issues and home repair issues. And today we're talking a lot about heating because of the weather. Although it was predicted to be a lot worse than it is, we can expect some pretty awful weather in the near future. And we're taking your calls at 212-209-2877. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Yes.
Am I on?
You are.
Okay. This is a safety call about a heater. This has to do with the plug.
Mm-hmm.
The plug seems to have been fried. I think it was pulled out by accident by a chair sort of pushing the meter. The heater works fine. It turns off automatically all the conditions that you gave in the beginning of the safety heaters. But the plug, where the wires come in, are fried.
Mm-hmm.
We are afraid to stick it back in. I don't think it should be. I think it needs to be cut off there and repaired. It's a two-prong plug. It doesn't have a ground on it. What's your opinion once the plug is fried? If we cut it off and we...
Well, it depends upon the heater itself. Depends upon the vintage of the heater. If it's a very old unit, it probably has, it's only a two-wire system where it only connects to what they call the neutral and the hot leg. With the newer ones, they have to be grounded, which is a third wire that connects to the chassis of the heater itself and then also connects to the ground of the electrical system in the building. As far as a plug that doesn't work or doesn't fit, those are easy to be replaceable, but if you go to our website and go to fixing electrical devices, it has a big section of the book I wrote called Recipes for Home Repair Electrical System. It'll tell you how to replace a wired plug, whether it be a two-wire system or whether it be a three-wire system.
Let me just
How does she get that? How does she access that? She goes
to... If she logs into Accurate Building Inspector's website and looks on the...
Okay.
On the publications, she'll see the book Recipes for Home Repair.
And look for that section.
There'll be how to replace an electrical plug.
Okay. Before you go on, how much do new electric heaters cost? Wouldn't it be just safer if you can afford it to get a brand new one?
Well, as far as they run from, like, depends upon how small they are and how large they are. They run from $20 up to $20 a unit and up to $50 to $100 a unit. Depends upon the size of it and how many devices they have on it. If you go there are so many different brands and so many different styles and so many different units. I bought a small electrical heater just for my bathroom, because when I take a shower or something like that, when you get out of the shower, it's freezing in my bathroom. So I bought a small electrical heater that has a three-prong connection that works very, very well.
But I do want to jump in here. If let me just jump in here and try to help you out here and give you some practical information. Yes, you can change the plug. You can go to any hardware store or home center and buy a replacement two-prong, or even if you buy a three-prong plug, you just don't connect the third prong. But the important thing about rewiring it is knowing the polarity of the device. And a lot of times if you do cut off the plug, you might actually, or you look at the wire, there may be an indicator on one of the wires, or one of the wires may be white or black. If you do have the white and black orientation, the black wire gets connected to the blade that is the smaller blade that goes into the smaller hole of the receptacle, and the white wire gets connected to the blade that's a little wider that goes into the wider hole, the wider slot of the receptacle. So it's important.
You're getting very political here, Larry.
Yes, and the there's on the wire itself, there's sometimes a tracer line on the wire to indicate which is the hot leg and which is the neutral leg. So you do have to do a little bit, because if you, hopefully it's a newer unit and it's double insulated, so where polarity may not matter as much, but it's important.
But what happens if you put it on the wrong ones? Do you want it blowing fuses?
No, you may end up with a situation that when the unit is not operating, that if there's metal on the unit, that could actually cause an electric shock. It's important to know what you're doing. And so that's why we do encourage, you know, people to try to do repairs, because, you know, there is a whole right to repair movement in this country. On the other hand, if you don't know what you're doing, buying a new heater may be the safest and best course of action.
Okay, caller?
Can I want to ask a clarification in one of the statements. This has to do with the polarities, and it has to do with the third prong. This is a two-plug
thing.
But there was an indication by one of you that said that the grounding is embedded in one of those wires.
That's not what I said. What I said was that even if you buy a plug that has three wires on it, you just don't use the grounding wire. You just connect to the two blades, the two flat blades that go into the receptacle.
And isn't it important to have that grounding wire used?
If it's not, no. There are many electrical equipments which are what we call double grounded, double insulated equipment. Many of my electrical tools only have two wires to them. They're not designed to be grounded because they're double insulated. And if that's the kind of device you have, then using a two-wire, if it was designed with a two-wire receptacle, a two-wire plug, then it can still have a two-wire plug. You don't need the grounding wire.
Okay, well, thank you.
If there is a grounding wire coming from the unit, it'll probably be green to color, and that means it goes to ground.
She already said it was just a ungrounded.
Yeah, but for
plug.
Other people, Larry, there are other listeners.
If you have, in fact, if you go into Recipes for Home Repair and it gives you the indication, it mentions the three kinds of wires that you may be observed. It's a black wire, a white wire, and a green wire. The white wire, Lars indicated, is the neutral. The black wire is the hot leg, which is where the power is coming from the utility company, and the green wire is for the grounding of it so as to make it safe. And we now have, in all new construction, everything is three-wire. But if it's an old building and everything else, in most instances, it's only a two-wire system, which you have to make a differentiation when you put it all together.
Okay, thank you for your call. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Happy New Year to you.
Are you there?
Mr. Lopez.
Yes, hi.
Yes, how you doing? Happy New Year to you, man.
Thank you.
Okay. First, I just want to say, man, that the situation with the fire in the Bronx, that happened because people, they don't know about certain appliances to use. That space, those space heaters, those are the old-fashioned ones that have those claws that get red hot like a toaster. Those things are essentially toasters. They're extremely dangerous. They came out like in the 50s, 40s and 50s.
But the people who lived in that building were poor. I'm not surprised that they didn't have the state-of-the-art equipment.
Yeah, but then again, they have the newer ones that have like the wires. They like, you know, they have like, you know, they just get hot, the ones you just plug in. Mm-hmm. They could have gotten those. I stay in Parkchester. They were built in the 30s and 40s, and we have the old school steam, like the steam tower. It's like 15 stories high. And the problem is the heat is extremely stellar here. Only problem is, you know, it just gets too hot sometimes. You have to open the window. I wish that, you know, when the PPC, they renovated the North and South condominium back in 2000, They gave us new windows, new faucets, sink heads and stuff. I really wish that they converted the heating systems to electric, like some of the modern buildings that, you can just switch a knob and adjust the heat. And since they have HVAC too, they have an AC apparatus too. That's what I wish they would have done.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. That's really important information. Go ahead, Al. Larry.
Do you have a question for yourself?
Okay, he's gone. He's gone, but okay. let me remind people that my guests are Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, and as Alvin has pointed out, he has a book that is available not only online, but from all of the places you can buy books online, called Recipes for Home Repair, which he wrote with Sam Bittman. And we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. BAI, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Russell. It's an honor to speak to Al and Larry. I have a question about
I'm chopped liver, is that it? Okay, go ahead.
I have a question on how to make those fire doors work if they're not closing properly. Do the fellas know, of a 1970s vintage, these self-closing doors probably have hinges with the spring inside, and they're activated with a pin that goes into different slots to make it close better or not. Why didn't they make these things tamper-proof? And do you think when they're criticizing Mayor Adams for having a close-the-door PSA, that criticism doesn't locate personal responsibility in the people most affected by a fire, and it creates learned helplessness? People can fix these doors themselves. Thank you very much.
Fixing a door is really somewhat complicated, because the things that can happen for a door that prevents it from closing is generally sometimes the screws that hold the hinges in place are loose, or maybe some settlement of the building itself, which changes the frame of the building at the door area, and then you have the door that jams into the frame, or the door stops, or the saddle, the marble or stone section on the floor area, or the upper section of the door. There are so many things that stop a door from opening and closing in a proper manner. When the building was new, everything works wonderful, but on time and use, also what stops the door from closing is, over the years, the painting of the door frames over and over again builds up the paint level that prevents the door from closing properly. These are many things that happen that cause a door not to close.
Okay, Larry.
It's also how much do people know what's supposed to be happening? Do they know that these are supposed to be self-closing doors, or do they think that when it stops self-closing, that kind of helps them when they want to run in and out of the apartment? So there's also a certain amount of education and knowledge which is important to people to know that these doors are supposed to self-close and self-close fully each time that the door is opened and closed. So there's a lot going on here. It's not as simple as teaching people for self-responsibility. It's actually just having the knowledge and wherewithal to do it.
And many of the people involved were immigrants who probably didn't even have a good command of English, so they might not have even been aware of those things. Should we take another call? Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
My house is a new house. It's a Sandy rebuilt house. And what do you think of heating vents being placed in the ceiling instead of near the floor? My head is hot and my feet are cold. Any suggestions?
Yes, and this is something...
Wear good socks.
I have to say, let me ask you one question. Does this house also have air conditioning?
It's all in one.
Right. This is an issue that I have been dealing with for many years now, that the problem is that people were actually builders and architects and engineers figure it's cheaper to put in one system of heating and air conditioning with one set of ductwork. But the unfortunate part is everything you do for heating, you do 180 degrees opposite for cooling. You heat from above, you heat from down below, but you air condition from above. You heat from the perimeter of the building, but you air condition from the core of the building. So it seems to be that many of the builders and developers decide that we're going to err on the side of air conditioning and not heating, which is fundamentally puzzling to me, because here in New York City, we tend to heat for 6-7 months, where we only air condition for 3, 4, or 5 months. So we're actually putting all the emphasis on a system that we use a lot less. I agree with you. The only thing that you can really do is have someone come in and extend the ductwork to the floor. And that would be the only way to get heating down there. That's why radiators are always on the floor, and because you want the heat to start low. And so the other issue is to put in, some kind of diverter system where it will shoot the air right down to the floor. But those are highly ineffective in most cases. It really is a problem. You're not the only person who complains about this, and it's just a way of builders and developers monetizing the system and putting in less effective systems, and seem to concentrate on air conditioning only.
We have time, I think, for one more call or so. You wanted to say, add something, Al?
Say that again?
How could the building department okay that kind of a plan?
Because that because those issues are not code issues.
Okay, so you're suggesting someone cut the wall, divert the vents towards the floor.
Right, and what you would end up with is a vent on the ceiling and a vent on the floor. So in the wintertime, you would close the vent on the ceiling, and in the summertime, you would close the vent on the floor.
Thank you for your call. I'm going to try to sneak another call in here. Hi, and can you make it quick, please?
Yes, hi. I have a really good form of insulation for the windows.
Mm-hmm.
I use foam core.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that will work also,
and,
because of that.
It works in the summer and the winter. The winter, I don't really use it, but it probably would be really good in the winter, especially the double-hung windows. You can buy a sheet, and then one fits on the top, one fits on the bottom.
Yes, that would probably add, I'm just going to say, a double-insulated glass window has an R value of only R2, which is, considering the number starts at 1, that's not really great. just to give context, a normal wall system has an R value of between 11 and 15, and a roof system has an R value between 20 and 40. So putting in that foam core will probably jump that R value up, probably about maybe double it to 4 or 5, which will definitely realize somewhat of a difference in the space.
Okay.
And you can buy them at the dollar store, craft stores. They're pretty cheap.
That's great.
I would just like to put one thing in that those people who are desperate to heat up their homes or their apartments, whatever it is, we're saying together, I think, that don't use or buy what they call is units that are fuel consuming inside the apartment itself. Fuel burning units need to be ventilated to the outside of the building. Using a non-ventilating fuel burning unit inside of your apartment or your building is one of the most dangerous things anyone can do.
Let's be specific about that. Propane and kerosene. Do not use a propane or kerosene heater inside your dwelling unit.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we have pretty much no time left, but we've been talking mostly about, in fact, all about inside the home. I do want to point out something that you've mentioned in the past, that all garden hoses need to be drained and brought indoors. If they're left outdoors, they'll burst from frozen ice expansion. So there are all sorts of other things that we could have addressed.
Yeah, I did also want to get to sustainability, but we haven't been on such a long time, about the floods that we had in Queens and how all these basements flooded. I wanted to talk about that a little bit, too, maybe in the future.
Uh-huh. Well, do you have a 30-second thing you can say?
I think that people have to realize, and whether, you know, people are living down there, which is obviously, you know, you can't do, but if you have a basement that has a half bath, a toilet, a sink, or what have you, we have to, and it flooded over this last year, you have to think about putting in some kind of pumping system that isolates the city sewer system from those appliances through the means of a check valve and a sewer ejector system, and that would actually stop it from reoccurring the next time that situation occurs, because guarantee it will happen again. And so it's something to think about, to try to make your space more sustainable, like we're doing in Staten Island by raising houses up by one story so they can still live in those areas. So you have to think of sustainability, and that should be basically the word of the next bunch of decades.
Well, we can't raise houses up one story all over the city.
No, that's why we're talking about putting in pumping systems. The problem they had in Queens is the sewers backed up, because remember, the sewer, top of the sewer is the manhole covers, and if your bathroom is below that level and the sewers rise up to that level, the sewer is just coming in through those lower fixtures like toilets, like shower bottoms, like sinks.
Lawrence and Alvin U. Bell are Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn and regular contributors to this show, and as always, it's been a great pleasure having you on our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
And that brings us to the end of our show. If you're just discovering this program and would like to hear more about one-hour deep dive interviews, you can access past shows streaming on demand at WBAI.org. We're also available as a podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else that you get your podcasts. And you'll find links to all of our over 600 past shows at LeonardLopateAtLarge.com. If you would like to write to me, my email address is leonardlopate@wbai.org. Before I sign off today, I need to ask you to step up right now and support Leonard Lopate at Large so we can keep bringing you the kind of informative, in-depth interviews you've come to expect from us, and special shows like the ones that we have with the U Bells, where you can call in and speak to the experts yourself. So please go online right now to give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950 to help keep Leonard Lopate at Large and WBAI on the air. Our listeners are our only source of income. And one great way to show your support is to become a sustaining member of this station, what we call a BAI buddy. You can do it at $10, $15, $20, or whatever level you're comfortable with. And I want to extend a special thanks to Benjamin Jones of Jersey City, who has just become a BAI buddy for $100 a month. We really do appreciate that. Any amount is good, especially now since we are facing all sorts of problems as a result of cutbacks from the pandemic. People just have... money's a little too tight for many people. We've been finding it hard to pay the rent on our tower, to the tower that we need to broadcast. So we're very grateful to people who've called in to help us with that. But again, that number is 212-209-2950. Or you can go online to give2wbai.org. Please do it now. Support the station. The station that depends 100% on our listeners. We don't take ads. We don't take grant money from anybody. So we are not indebted to anybody. We don't have to listen to anybody else. We're totally free radio. But please be sure to make that contribution in the name of Leonard Lopate at Large. And thanks. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when global economics correspondent for the New York Times, Peter S. Goodman, will discuss his new book, which is called Davos Man, How the Billionaires Devoured the World. We'll see you then.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Jury selection begins today in the federal prosecution of three former Minneapolis police officers who took part in the deadly arrest of George Floyd. All three are charged with using the color of law or their positions as police officers to deprive Floyd of his civil rights on May 25, 2020, by showing deliberate indifference as Derek Chauvin held his knee on George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes, ultimately killing him. Federal prosecutions of officers involved in on-duty killings are rare, and prosecutors face a high legal standard to show that an officer willfully deprived someone of their constitutional rights. Democrats last night failed to push their voting rights legislation through the Senate, lacking the votes to overcome a Republican filibuster. All Republicans and two Democrats, Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, voted against any changes that would allow a voting rights bill to pass with a simple majority. Following the vote, several Republican lawmakers lined up to shake Kyrsten Sinema's hand. A coalition of civil rights groups, including the NAACP, the National Urban League, and the National Council of Negro Women, said in a statement that they refused to call what happened in the Senate a defeat. Quote, members of the U.S. Senate tonight covered themselves in shame. They chose cowardice and discrimination over courage and principle. The Supreme Court yesterday rejected Donald Trump's request to prevent the select committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol from obtaining White House records concerning Trump's activities leading up to and during the insurrection. The ruling let stand an appeals court ruling that Trump desired to maintain the confidentiality of internal White House communications was outweighed by the need for a full accounting of the attack and the disruption of the certification of the 2020 electoral count. The vote was 8-1, with only Justice Clarence Thomas dissenting. President Biden said NATO officials, nations are divided over how to respond to a possible Russian incursion into Ukraine, sending U.S. officials scrambling to play damage control. Biden's gaffe, while likely an honest statement, publicized private divisions within NATO, just as Western nations have called for unity in support of Ukraine. Biden appeared to make a distinction between a minor incursion and a full-scale invasion by Russia, but the White House later released a statement saying Biden would consider any movement of troops over the Ukraine border as an invasion. The number of newly employed people in the U.S. rose last week to the highest level in 3 months as the spread of the Omicron virus continues to upend labor markets. Jobless claims jumped to about 286,000 in the largest one-week increase since July. The increase in unemployment claims comes as the Federal Reserve Bank has promised to raise interest rate if the labor market is strong, and some analysts have suggested the Fed could pause rate increases if jobless claims continue to climb. A federal judge has approved a plan to restructure billions of dollars of Puerto Rico's debt, allowing the U.S. territory to exit bankruptcy following years of litigation that racked up nearly $1 billion in legal and administrative costs, according to the Washington Post. The plan, put forth by a bipartisan oversight board established as part of the 2016 Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act, reduces $33 billion of the territory's debt by 80%. Currently in Washington, it's cloudy and 36 degrees. In New York, it's cloudy and 32. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
The previous program was Leonard Lopate at Large, usually heard Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Stay tuned for Take Charge of Your Health. This is WBAI New York, 99.5.